Bruchim Abba M'Shem Hashem. Anytime Klal Yisrael comes together on their quest to serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam with more menuchas and nefesh, with more achrayis, with more simcha, with more meaning and feeling, it creates a kveid shamayim that brings about an eis ratzon. The Rebbeinu Shalom should be memale all of our desires, Bezus Hashem. And we should take a see, siyata deshmaya in this event. And all of us, together with Gans Klal Yisrael, to be zeichet to serve the Rebbeinu Shalom with menuchas and nefesh. A tremendous thank you goes to the LRC and to the LSJ. All the people that were involved in this, putting this together. They saw a need. They took the step, they took the achrayas, and they pulled it together. For that, we all thank them. Rav Moshe Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once met an administrator of a kollel. And this person told him, you know, I'm getting older, I'm having health issues, I think it's time for me to retire. And Rav Moshe told him the following. He said, you think that your work in the kollel is what's giving you challenges, and if you would retire, you would live a better and happier life. But what you don't realize is that it's very possible that your very life sustenance comes about from your work in the kollel. And this person listened to Rav Moshe, continued, and when he stopped, that was the end. Very often in life, it takes about a reframing of our minds to understand and appreciate that the actions that we do and the outcome of those actions is part of our Avodas Hashem in order to properly appreciate and understand and work the Avodah that the Rabbeinu Shalom asks us to do. One can cook a supper and look at it as a tedious and sometimes stressful and difficult action. And another person can cook a supper and look at it as chesed and ava and avodas Hashem and find meaning and fulfillment and realize their tafkid in life within that. One can get up in the morning and go through the daily grind, whatever that daily grind may be, and live a difficult and stressful and painful day, and the other person can go through the same exact day, but recognize and appreciate that these are challenges that the Eibishter gave us, and grow with them, and find meaning and fulfillment, and simcha within those challenges, and within the daily grind of life. It's all about the frame of mind, and where we put it. When discussing the topic of financial responsibility, the average person thinks we have compartments as Yidden in life. We have a compartment of Torah, a compartment of Chesed, a compartment of family, a compartment of Ishtadlus, a compartment of Tztaka, responsibilities, all different compartments we're made up of as Yidden. And the average person, I think, thinks that I've spoken to that the topic of financial responsibility and the consideration that goes into that is within the bucket of ishtadlus, maybe if you want to go a little bit more than that, a mitzvah to some extent. But if we would reframe our minds and understand that the topic of financial responsibility is one example of what the Mesilas Yesharim calls the Zahirus, which is the foundation of the entire Brice of Rapichas Ben Yair, that's the beginning of what the Vilna Gaon told his Talmud of Zamla Velazhin, that this is the Mahalach to grow closer to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. You begin with Zahirus. That's where it is, and a person focuses and thinks and invests energy, time, effort, responsibility into giving themselves the opportunity to grow in life in a fashion and in a manner that a person takes an achrayis for himself, takes responsibility for ourselves. It creates meaning in life. It creates happiness in life. Not only is it not within the compartment of Ishtadlos? It very much is the foundation of all of our Avodas Hashem. And when a person instills within himself the responsibility in what he's doing in life, befrat in finances, which the Rabbeinu Shalom set up, that this is the mahalach, that we live our lives, this is the means that take us to our goal of l'saneg al Hashem v'l'hanes m'ziv shekhinasi, as Mishil Sharm says. And we take that achrayis, and we recognize that that's a mitzvah, and it's the foundation of everything that we do. Zehirus. The first level in the Avodas Hashem of the Vilna Gaon Brayso of Mepichas Ben Yoyer. Then I think it would frame our mind a little bit more and be able to understand that it's not just an opportunity to spend some time to live a better, happier, and more relaxed life. Rather, this is within itself our obligation of Avodas Hashem within life. And when we spend the time doing it and working on it and thinking about it, it's not just a fulfillment of our responsibility to our families and ourselves, but it's an opportunity to grow closer to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Truly everything we do, as Rabbi Yoni explains, is an opportunity and really a mitzvah. But there are different compartments, and this is the foundation which is called Zehiris in the Mesilas Yesharim. In conversation with the LRC over the past week, talking about this event, I was told two stories. I'll share them with you. One person purchased a house somewhere within the extended Lakewood area, and within a very, very short while, reached out to the LRC that they're unable to make the mortgage payments. A very, very, very painful situation. Another person reached out before they bought that house, and they sat down with the LRC, and they came to understand that the purchase they were going to make, they would have been in a situation where they wouldn't be able to make those mortgage payments, which would have taken them to a very painful situation. And it was that phone call that changed the trajectory of their entire family's life. It's not that much. It's really not that much. My Rabbi Rav Don Segel says over a memra in Yiddish or Hebrew, I'll say it in English, better to lose a minute of your life than to lose your life in a minute. When we invest the time and energy, take a minute out of our lives or an hour or whatever it takes, it's not that much. But it's just that level of zahiris, that level of responsibility to take from ourselves an achrayis, a zahirus, within our lives and recognize and appreciate that it's that small period of time that we take which will allow us to save ourselves and our families and ultimately our community. The Eibushit should give us the Atta Deshmaya to Taka B'Matzliach, Taka understand, and truly come close to the Baruch Shalom on the ladder of Rav Pinchas Ben Yoyer. Over the past, I don't know if it's months or a year, this topic has been coming up again more and more often over the past year, maybe 2 years, and it's snowballing, unfortunately. And I've been speaking with Rav Gwertzman Shlita, who really, really, really has taken the bull by the horns and recognized a situation where people really are trying to come close to the Baruch Shalom and trying to serve him with Menuchas HaNefesh, but unfortunately are faced with challenges that don't allow them that opportunity. And he has really taken the bull by the horns and approached it and help people and guide it, and he continues to guide, and it's a tremendous covet to have Rav Gwertzman here. Rav Gwertzman.
Poischem b'chveir achsanya. I would like to thank all those who put in such tremendous time and foresight and to be able, that we should be able to have this event, as Rav Milinowitz mentioned, the Knesiyah L'Shem Shemayim. But I think, in a reflection to how this event came about, it's important to mention because it's something that we all can learn from. There are a number of employees by the LLRC who have a day job, and their job is to answer the phone and to help people. And they saw, as Rabbi Milinowitz mentioned, a brewing crisis, whether it's in housing, in people buying houses that they can't necessarily afford, or in general, people spending above their means. And each one of them felt, I can't just sit by idle and do nothing. And from that feeling, from that care, is what was born this event. And I think it's a lesson for us all. Very often in our daily lives, we see things that we may not feel is right. And we very often just glance over it and move on. And when we see people through their means of parnasa, look to go above and beyond to help Klal Yisrael, it's something that every one of us can incorporate in our lives as well. Chazal tell us in Masechtas Beah, in relation to Kavod Shabbos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Lavu alai v'ani ashalem. You borrow money, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I will pay back. If you look at many of the Mefarshim, they struggle with this statement. What does it mean? What's this concept that a person's borrowing money and he could rely on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay him back? The Drisha in Simin Reish Mem Beis at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos gives two explanations as to what this means, that a person is borrowing money and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paying back. He says, either it has to be talking about that the person has mashkoinus, he has items that he can use to pay back if needed. And in that case, he has a right to borrow the money, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll repay it. Well, the second pshat, the Drisha says, is that we're talking about that the person has the money in his bank account, and it was maybe set aside for other things. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can borrow that money for Shabbos, and I will refill the bank account. But what's clear, and it's mentioned in the Bir Halacha, that the Mefarshim understood that it can't mean simply, just go borrow recklessly and assume that you'll pay back. As the Bir Halacha says, that's not called borrowing. A person who borrows without any mahalach of how to pay it back, without any foresight into how he's going to pay. Pasuk says, Levi Rasha v'lo Yishalim. He's not allowed to do that. And therefore, it must be that it's something else. And it must be that there's some cheshbon, and then he can rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's obvious from this halacha in what we can take in our daily lives is this yisoid. We must be responsible when borrowing. When a person borrows money and has no way, al pi derech hateva, to pay it back, that's not oiska halten al pi halacha. Halacha is mechayiv that we should have a mahalach and to just go and borrow and put oneself into debt without any way of getting out of it is incorrect. We live in difficult times. The financial pressures are found in many areas, especially for the younger families living in basements, watching real estate prices shoot up, sometimes $50,000 or $100,000 in the matter of months, hundreds of thousands of dollars over a year. Every person feels as a father and a mother of a family that I have a basic obligation to ensure that my family has a roof over their head. And therefore, I must do whatever I could to purchase a home. And this is a feeling that's universal. We all need a basic shelter. Nobody wants to have to wander from place to place as a renter. And therefore, there's a tremendous feeling of urgency that every person has that I must purchase a home. But the question is, at what cost? Many times, you speak to younger light, and they'll say, I know people, they're getting the same coil check as I. Their wife is in a very similar job to my wife, and if they can afford it, it must be that I'm missing something. I must also be able to afford it. And therefore, I can go ahead and purchase a home. Unfortunately, many people do not properly sit down and chesben oist the basic costs of a home. It is true that for purchasing a home, a person can push himself maybe a little bit more than he would for other expenses. He may not even have to cheshbon ois where every last penny is going to come from. But it basically has to make sense. A person cannot just purchase a house because he has some money from Yerusha with a down payment and a very nice uncle who's willing to co-sign a house without asking too many questions. It's a recipe for disaster. And as Rabbi Milinowitz mentioned, the women in the LRRC are beginning to get phone calls. I can't afford my mortgage. I'm afraid my house is going to go into foreclosure. And how does this happen? Because there are families who simply don't think past a down payment. They think, if I can afford a down payment, I can afford it. And this is a tremendous mistake. Another unfortunate machla that our community suffers from is an understanding of what it means a house. What is a family with two or three children who have a few dollars together to purchase a home? What is the minimum that that home must look like? And unfortunately, when you sit down with people, there are sagas in square footage of what that home must be, gets bigger by the day, by the month, and inflates almost as quickly as Lakewood real estate prices. And what was so acceptable, not that many years ago, where a young family would move into a home that suits a young family, keep their expenses down, have an affordable mortgage payment, and as the family grows, and as Chazal say, with each child comes with it the spoon of parnasa, the siyata d'shmaya for that child. And as the family grows and it becomes a necessity for the home to get bigger, There was a Siyata Dishmaya. And if you look around Lakewood, many of those small homes that was purchased at the turn of the century are no longer that small. And people say, construction is not for me. I got to do this right, and I'm doing it right the first time. What does it mean doing it right? What is right? That a person should be living in a home with bedrooms that he doesn't need. And in the main bedroom of his house is a person who can't sleep. Is that called doing it right? And taking on second and third jobs when people have two or three children at home because their home has to be a certain size. Is that something that makes sense? Something to think about. People take on huge mortgages and they have cheshbonos. They'll this, they'll that, and they'll pull it together. When a person has an $8,000 mortgage and Rachmana Litzlan, something goes wrong for a few months, he's unhelpable. Imagine a family trying to put together $24,000 to pay for a mortgage for 90 days. These are unhelpable numbers. When a person's mortgage is reflected on the house size for the family size that he needs, and Rachman al-Tzlan, he's unemployed, he's helpable. And these are cheshbonos we have to make. We have to know if a family, Rachman al-Tzlan, goes into foreclosure and Rachman al-Tzlan loses their home, the Shalom Bayis, the Tzfriedenkeit of the children will never be the same. Which means that when a person moves into a home that he can't afford and he's risking foreclosure, he's risking everything. And it's imperative for young people to sit down with somebody who's seen life, the ups and the downs. Everyone says Lakewood real estate can't go down. I heard that schmooze in 2005. And for those of you who are old enough to remember 2008, it showed real estate in Lakewood could go down. But even if not, if I can't afford something, I can't afford it. And yes, there are ways. And yes, there are mahalchim. And yes, there are ways to ride out high interest rates. But you need somebody who's seen this, who's watched this in his life, who can tell you this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. Don't risk your family's future because someone tinted while I was drinking a coffee this morning that you can't go wrong. And for those who are smart enough to purchase a house that fit their family, and now, Baruch Hashem, have a growing family, and they're turning around and looking to make an addition. The famous statement uttered sometimes by architects, construction foremen, and home designers, once you're doing it, may as well, has costed many people a lot of menuchas hanefesh. It may not be as well, because lemaisa, everything costs and everything has to be paid for. In regards to general finances, I think we could divide the people and their finances into three groups. Group number one are people that have everything they need plus extra money. I don't know if those people exist, and if they do, they're definitely not here. The second group are people that are making ends meet, but it's tight. They worry about all kinds of expenses. For some, they can make ends meet, but when it comes to the summer months, to camp, it becomes too much. For others, they can even live year to year. But when it comes to big expenses, first bar mitzvahs, seminary, chasanah, supporting edims, and so on, they worry. Their income doesn't suffice for that. And then there's the third group who unfortunately are not making ends meet at all. For those that are pakas yoyser, making ends meet, but they feel tight, it's important to understand that every decision of every dollar we spend has consequences. I have an opportunity to be putting away money. I'm not. Or I have an opportunity to put away a lot of money, and I'm putting away a little money. Why is that? Because every dollar that I'm spending is coming out from somewhere, is coming out of a savings account. We're mortgaged to say, when we look at whether or not to spend on certain expenses, we say, can I afford it or I can't afford it? And that's really the wrong attitude. Because when that's the attitude, we get very down, I can't afford it. And then when we tell our children we can't afford it, they want to know, why is Tati and Mami such losers? Because everybody else seems to be able to afford it. But the real way to look at it is, maybe I could afford it. But is this really the best way to spend $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000? Maybe instead of doing whatever it is, if I would decide not to do it, I could put it away. And instead of watching my children get older and worry how I'm going to make chasanas and support edims and send to seminary and whatever other expenses come, I can maybe live in Menuchas HaNefesh. So I could afford it, but do I want to do it? Is it something that's kedai? And maybe if I cut back just a little bit, I won't have to take fill in the blank of the medication as my credit card bill becomes due because I can't figure out how to pull everything together. I could afford it, but I could choose not to do it. And this becomes an attitude, not a failure of success, and an attitude that can be given over to the children. I could put any car I want in the driveway, but at what expense? And I have bigger and better plans for you. I want you to marry a Talmud Chacham. I want you to go to seminary. I want to be able to pay for chasanas without every guy in my shul having to help me pay for it. This is the attitude we have to have. Unfortunately, as we go, more and more things become necessities. What was yesterday's luxuries are today's necessities. I want to share with the Olam. There's something that we all know what it is called the Ura Chinese Auction Book. The idea behind the Ura Chinese Auction Book is to come up with wild, exotic things. All you have to do is pay $5 and you could feel for 6 months that you have shaychus to this and perhaps you'll actually win it. So I want to share with you an exotic idea from an old Ura Chinese auction book. It was called Around the Year. You can spend summer in the mountains, Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael, winter in the Florida, Pesach in a hotel, and Shavuos in Lakewood. Baruch Hashem, We didn't catch on to everything. Shavuos in Lakewood is still not in style. But everything else, how many of us have to feel like we owe a teretz to our children? Why we're not in the mountains? Why we're not in Eretz Yisrael for Sukkos? Why we're not in Florida midwinter? Why we're not in a hotel for Pesach? Do we have any idea of the astronomical costs behind all of this? Someone not from our community can make a comfortable living with all these expenses. And ich darf schuldigen, I have to explain to my children what's going on. How much enjoyment do these people have that it's worth middle class families spending on these exotic vacations instead of being able to comfortably put away money to be able to save for future expenses? And as middle class families, for those of us in this room, whether we're young and we're still making ends meet, whether we're middle aged and Baruch Hashem, we have what we need. We have to sit down and figure out a poshita question. There are two things in my budget. There are things that I have to spend on, and then there's something called discretionary spending. I don't need it. It's discretionary. Now, every person is entitled to have discretionary spending. Let's be realistic. But how much? Does the number start with a 1, with a 2, with a 3, with a 4, with a 5? And a lot of people will be shocked when they sit down and figure out how much money is discretionary spending. If it's a 5-digit number that begins with a 5, it's shocking. But to a lot of people, that's what the number is. And as a couple, when we sit down and we open up our books and we have to look at each other and say, $55,000? On what? And if I were to cut that number in half 10 years ago, I could pay for every one of my chasanas. That is step number one. Boyu Cheshvin. We have to know what's happening, because once we know, all of a sudden, is it really kedai? Someone once mentioned to me, he sat down with a counselor and he says, you know how painful it is? I'm still renting. If I would have, for the last 5 years, spent half on discretionary spending, I'd be living in my own home. But we need to wake up. We need to realize that a lot of times, not always, if we would sit down and make a cheshbon on what we're doing, we would realize that we can do this. And then the whole geschmack, the whole yetzer hara, half of it's gone because it's not worth it. And for those of us who are struggling, many times people feel helpless. I don't have what I need. I have hundreds, thousands of dollars in debt. I'm getting hit with credit card bills. And the easiest way that people have in dealing with this crisis is ignore it. The problem is, the only thing I know that if you ignore it is go away is your teeth. Nothing else when you ignore it goes away. It doesn't happen. So the question is, what does a person do? And the truth is, it's a big mistake. I've spoken to people, $40,000, $50,000 in credit card debt. The credit card companies charge 24.99% interest. You know what that means in simple English? That in 4 years, you are paying the entire principal to the credit card in English, in interest. And sometimes, when you sit down, and you'll make a cheshbon, families will see that they make mistakes, they're doing better. But the debt is so crushing that they're running in circles, they feel lost. And if they would just sit down and figure out, I'm running $15,000 a year short. I did that for 5 years. Now I have interest. Now it's this. Now it's that. It's crushing. But if I could sit down and poshut make a cheshbon, so I'm 15,000 short. Is there something I could do? Is there family that can help? Is there coupons from the neighborhood that could help? I didn't want to ask because it's not going to help anyway. But maybe now I put it together, it's going to work. I wasn't going to take that second job because why should I? But maybe now a taka makes sense. There are so many people in our community. Our community is a community of chesed. When a person is able to sit down with whether it's a gemach, a karev, or perhaps even an askin, and show him on paper that it's the interest that's crushing and destroying this family. People have been able to take out gemach loans. And remember, in 4 years, you repaying a gemach loan just on the interest you were paying monthly to a credit card company. Boyu cheshbon, let's not allow our yiyush to step in. We're here tonight with thanks to LSJ, an organization that prides itself in making itself available to the tzibur at large for free to help and sit down and counselors professionally trained to help couples figure out where they're holding, how much is discretionary spending, how could they put themselves back on their feet, v'chulu v'chulu. I urge every one of you to take advantage of this free service. Sit down with your spouse as a couple and figure out, poshut, what are we doing? Where are we going? Put the numbers in front of you. And you'll see that that is the beginning to financial success. That is beginning to be able to break free from this Yetzer Hara and this rat race. And taka and the schus of each one of us who came out here tonight in the freezing cold, every one of us has what to do to try to tackle this Yetzer Hara. We should be zeicha to have the siyata d'shmaya, to be able to spend wisely, and that every person in this room, every yid in our community, and every yid in Klal Yisrael should have what they need and should be able to live in menuchas hanefesh b'chavas hadas. Yashar koach.
Yashar koach, Rav Gwurtzman. When Rav Gwurtzman mentioned 24.99% on the credit card interest, and he said it takes 4 years to repay it, I heard a sound from the side of the room that said, it's a lot more than that. I think that was Mr. Horowitz. So that was his akdama to his drasha tonight. Besides of being a Rebbe She'enikel, I'm not sure how tempting that is to all of us, some of us in the room. To me, it's very tempting. Mr. Horowitz is one who guides in his free time, has guided probably, is it hundreds or thousands, I don't know what it is, thousands of people like us here in this room. His day job, he helps people that are a little bit out of our league, but throughout his free time, he spends his day and night and energy as a self-appointed responsibility to use his very, very unique capabilities to help us understand our finances and to be able to responsibly and with some effort come to a position where we're able to taka happily live lives of menuchas hanefesh. It's a great covet and a great schos to have Mr. Horowitz here. Please, Mr. Horowitz.
I'm not usually daunted to get up at a podium. I've done it once or twice already. But to be honest with you, these types of seminars give me butterflies in my stomach. And the reason is that when you address a crowd, as Rabbi Gwertzman said, you're addressing a whole host of cohorts of people. And it's very, very difficult to find things that are davar hashav l'chol nefesh. If I sit here and preach to you about overspending, many of you are going to be thinking, what are you talking about? I don't spend an extra penny. I don't have an extra penny. If I sit here and talk to you about living with a cheshbon, it'll pertain to some of you, and some of you say, we keep cheshbon, we still don't have enough. And all this goes through my mind as I'm getting up to this podium. I once heard from a Zayde of mine, there was a Maggid that came to town, and he would say to people that he's a shoe salesman. The shoe salesman brings out a pair of shoes, it doesn't fit you, you don't get insulted. The pair wasn't meant for you. It's meant for somebody else. So I ask you if there's anything that I say here tonight that offends you or maybe doesn't pertain to you, hopefully it's meant for somebody else. During my day job, I work with people for whom money is no object. The problems they have, Rahmanul Itzlan, are not to be fixed with money. But I surmise if you're in this room tonight, money is very much an object for you. And lest you think that I stand here on an ivory podium addressing you from some ivory tower, preaching to you about something I know nothing about, I'm going to begin by saying that I know exactly what it means to struggle. I know what it means to worry about what potentially tomorrow brings and to write a check and say a kapitel tillim that doesn't bounce like a rubber ball. I grew up watching my parents, all of the shalom, stress over money. I spent many years struggling financially, living paycheck to paycheck. Before, Baruch Hashem, with great siyat d'shmaya, I was able to stabilize my situation. Many sleepless nights, many nights waking up in a cold sweat, looking into my children's room and wondering how I am going to bring them up, pay their tuition, marry them off, and so on and so forth. Moreover, Abaisai, no matter where I've gone in my life since then, these are things I'm never going to forget. I decided to share with you some very, very personal things tonight. Because while I don't live in Lakewood, I live in Lakewood. The stories come to me every day, the phone calls, the people come to my house, the tears, the stress, the worry. While I don't live here, I know exactly what's going on. And I looked into myself and I said, what are the things that I can share with you that are davar hashav l'chol nefesh? What are the things that lie inside of me that I wish I can just transplant into every single one of you? And not just the ones that are here, but the people that are not here. So I'd like you to walk away from this with three words. And I'm going to speak about each of them. The first word is discipline. The second word is fear. And the third word is shame. The definition of discipline is the quality of being able to behave in a controlled manner, which involves obeying particular rules or standards. When a person's driving down a four-lane highway at 4 o'clock in the morning and there isn't a car in sight, he or she can relax their normal driving disciplines because the situation gives them a great amount of room for error. When any one of us is driving down the road to Amuka, and if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about,
right after it rained and there's buses coming up the other way. You're holding on to that steering wheel, and you know that relaxing your discipline for even a second could spell Rachmanu Litzlan disaster. For the past number of years, people have believed that they were traveling on a four-lane highway at 4 o'clock in the morning. Debt was cheap. Money was everywhere. COVID stimulus filled up people's bank accounts. I watched this chart every month when I was at J.P. Morgan. $2.7 trillion of excess capital inside of bank accounts, and some of them were in your bank accounts. And I watched how that dwindled and dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. Did it go into 401ks, IRAs? Did America's savings as a country go up? Not at all. And then I said, here's what's going to happen. Right when it dwindles down to nothing, which it has, debt will start to rise. Because once a person starts spending, it's very difficult to go backwards. So we were driving along. Discipline, that's something I left in school. People thought the good times are going to continue to roll. And one day it came to an end. It started with this little nasty word of inflation. And anybody that's in finance knew that if inflation comes and you know how to read it, which is my job, it doesn't go away that quickly. And you know what the next thing is going to be. It's going to be interest rates. And then once you get interest rates, you get threats of recession. And then the lane started narrowing. We went from 4 to 3 to 2 to 1. And we were truly on the road to Amuka. And we really had no margin of error. But that was 2 years ago. But nobody realized it. My brothers and sisters, I grew up on the road to Amuka. When I grew up, there was no margin for error because my parents didn't have one. When I grew up, debt was a dangerous word. When I grew up, I was immunized from the insanity that I hear every day as the result of one word. The second word on my list, fear. I ran from poverty like I was running from a black, hungry dog. I still, when I hear people describe what they're going through, have to hold myself back like Yosef HaTzadik from crying, because I literally feel the pain and I feel the fear because I lived this fear growing up. There's two types of fear I've learned. There's paralyzing fear, debilitating fear, and then there's motivating, constructive fear. Fear of debt, fear of bouncing a check, humiliation of coming on to others, asking for a tuition reduction, facing chas v'shalom foreclosure or bankruptcy. These were fears I grew up with. They were tangible. But they were also motivating. They motivated me to hold on to that steering wheel. I've heard people say, people in my family, relatives that have come to me, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'll file for bankruptcy. I'll do a short sale. My parents will bail me out. The klal won't let me fall. And therefore, I'll jump. And I'm thinking, are these people crazy? Or am I crazy? Because one of us is crazy. Am I the only one that, Rahman al-Islam, would rather bury myself 6 feet under than suffer such a humiliating fate? What happened to the disciplines of the last generation that they deployed that made it possible for them to come to a country where they didn't speak the language with absolutely nothing and build yeshivas, bata midrashim, businesses, discipline? They came here penniless. They came here with shattered emotional and psychological selves. They lived with a cheshbon because money was scarce. They lived with a cheshbon because they knew that they're not here to have a ball. They're here to raise a generation of Erlich Yidden, disciplined Yidden. As Rabbi Gwertzman said, discipline requires planning, it requires thought, it requires we each draw a line in the sand and say, Ad kan. I don't care what the insane society around me is doing. I won't go into that type of debt. I will not bring that expense into my house no matter what. This is a city of Torah. Bnei Torah rank amongst the most disciplined people in the world. We make army veterans look like sloppy slobs. We'll starve before we eat anything that's not kosher with our heksher. We will be burned at the stake before we mechal Shabbos. We daven 3 times a day. We learn. We do chesed. We use our time and money for others. We train our mouths, our ears, our feet, our hands. We learn halacha. We look to Rabbeim. If there's a shaila in the kitchen, we know what we must and must not do. How then can we also rank amongst the most undisciplined people when it comes to our finances? How do we buy homes where a simple Excel spreadsheet would have said, stay away? I have 40 or so nieces and nephews. Probably about 25 of them have already bought homes. The total sum number that came to me, their uncle, with the spreadsheet, and said, does this make sense, Uncle Naftali, was 1. Uno. 1. Where are they? Where are they? My door's open. I have billionaires that want to talk to me. My nephews, 1 nephew came to me with the spreadsheet. Where are the other 39? We can't wait until we're in trouble. Credit cards. Your hand should shake when you swipe it. If there's anything you should be afraid of, is that piece of lousy plastic which has destroyed homes, marriages. I can't even tell you. Rahman al-Itzlan, I know people who slit their wrists and came this close to not being here because of credit card debt. Why are we so undisciplined that we can't say no to our children? Too afraid to tell them money is scarce. How do we head into our 30s and 40s and 50s having not saved one dime for retirement? How has what others think become more important to us than what's good for us? Let's forget about us for a second. Let's forget about what we're doing to ourselves. What are we teaching our children? Living an undisciplined life is a guarantee to give forth undisciplined children. My parents told me the truth. Mommy and Tati work very, very hard. For every penny that we have, we don't have money to waste. I'm sorry, Shefula, your friend just got a brand new 10-speed raw spike. I'm sorry that he has Adidas sneakers and that they're going to Florida for midwinter. We can't afford it. That's what my parents told me. They told me the truth. I drove a girl's red Schwinn bike to yeshiva until I was 15 years old. It didn't have speeds. Speeds were things that my friends had. When I was 15 or 16, I stole my father's afikoman, and he took me to Toys R Us to finally get me a bike. And this was my dream. I still remember dreaming what this bike's going to look like. Well, first of all, it's going to be a boy's bike. I always wanted to have a boy's bike. And we came to Toys R Us, and there it was, my dream bike. And I said, Tati, that's the bike I want. And my father said to me, Shefula, would you mind getting this one? It's on sale. It's $14 cheaper. It was a girl's bike. And I looked at my father and I said, Tati, I'm happy to drive that bike. In the back of my garage, there's an all-carbon bike that weighs 3 ounces. You can lift it with your finger. It's my trophy, my first boy's bike. I've rode it 4 times. It's sitting there. I was able to buy myself a boy's bike. When I was bar mitzvah, I wore my cousin's hand-me-down hat. It was 2 sizes too big. I still cringe when I see my bar mitzvah pictures because were it not for my ears, the hat would have come down to cover my eyes. I once tore my pants on Shabbos. It was a Chips and Twigs blue suit, and I tore the pants. And I knew very well that my mother cannot afford to buy me a new pair of pants. So I did what any sensible 9-year-old would do. I Elmer glued them together, put a dictionary on top of them, and thought, when I come back the next day, everything's going to be fine. Despite all that, I could be honest with you and say, I have never spent any time in therapy. No PTSD, no low self-esteem. I'm fine, Baruch Hashem. I didn't go off the derech. I didn't lose my mind. When Baruch Hashem money came my way, I survived by my parents telling me the truth. Shefula, we just can't afford it. And I never thought my parents were losers. I saw them going every day and giving their blood and sweat to support me. My father used to drink L'chaim. My father, L'shalom, used to drink L'chaim the day he finished paying tuition. He would sit down with my mother and they would drink L'chaim. The first day of every Zman, Baruch Hashem, I write out tuition checks for the entire year. I don't go into the second day owing tuition because I grew up with the fear of Rachmana Litzlan, if I lose my job, who's going to pay Schar Limud? That's what my father worried about. And I still worry. If chas v'sholem, something were to happen to me, what would happen to the tuition? That's how ingrained in me the fear and the discipline of meeting my financial obligations. I grew up probably with too much fear, but I'll take too much over too little any day of the week. Fear plus discipline equals consistency. People think I'm a financial guru. Call me up. So Naftali, when interest rates going to go down? They're surely going to go down, right? The Fed's lowering interest rates. I go, they're not going down. What do you mean? They're lowering interest rates. You don't know how interest rates work. People have no idea how interest rates work, right? The Fed's lowering interest rates, so mortgages are going down, right? Wrong. In fact, last year when they started lowering interest rates, I told people, you better take out mortgages now because I guarantee you interest rates are going up. And they said, you're crazy. I said, okay. And guess what happened? They went up. People don't know how interest rates work. But Mirtz Hashem, Be'ezus Hashem, inflation will moderate. The price of eggs will go down from $47 a dozen. And everything will be back to normal. You probably will never see a 2.7% mortgage in your lifetime, but maybe you will if you live as long as Mr. Shelley. I don't know. But let's assume all that wonderful stuff happens. Discipline and fear means consistency. It doesn't matter. It doesn't change my lifestyle one iota. All it means is that Baruch Hashem, I can sock more money away, more money away, more money away. My 401k, my IRA, my Chassan account. No, just because there's more money doesn't mean, to Rabbi Gwertzman's point, that discretionary spending becomes something we never think about again. If I can think about discretionary spending, then anybody can think about discretionary spending. I want to get to the last word. The word is shame. The reality is we're ashamed. We're ashamed to tell our children the truth. We're ashamed to buy a used minivan when everybody else on the block just got a brand new Odyssey Elite. And they're paying as much as I paid on my first mortgage payment for it. Grace a glick. Morale, it's a murdic morale. I encourage you all to learn it. Morale has something called Nesiv Abusha. It's a Mordika morale. The morale says that the difference, the opposite of Busha is Azus. Brazenness. And he asks a simple kasha. The Gemara says, Gemara in Yevamah says that the three simanim of Klai Yisrael we know is that they're Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Goyim L'chasadim. Busha is, it's who we are. It's in our DNA. So he asks, the Gemara says in Beya, that the reason why the Torah was given to Klai Yisrael is because they are Azim. We're Azis Metzach. So what are we? Are we shameful people or are we brazen people? Says the morale, there's two types of busha. There's a busha that comes from strength and there's a busha that comes from weakness. A person can be shamed into doing what's wrong because they don't have the stamina, they don't have the azus to stand up for what's right. They're embarrassed. They don't want to be seen as someone who's different, less affluent, not in the clique. And they compromise. It could be halacha. It could be fiscal responsibility. They're ashamed. If Klai Yisrael had that in their DNA, we can never say things like, I can't eat that. I can't go there. I can't say that. I can't wear that. The Rabbanu Shlalom gave the Torah to Klai Yisrael because we're Azim. We could say, no, I'm not doing that. We don't get shamed into doing what's wrong. We're ashamed of doing what's wrong. There's a shame that comes from tremendous power. That is beneath me. That is reckless. That is undisciplined. That is going to feel right this minute and is going to have long-term implications, as Rabbi Gwertzman said. People are so embarrassed, and I totally understand that, to say to their wife and their children, we can't. All they're worrying about is, what does it make me look like? I'm ashamed to be weak. I'm ashamed to be unsuccessful. I'm ashamed not to be a gevir. And that's the type of shame, says the Maharal, we should avoid at all costs. We should be ashamed to have such shame. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a busha. A busha to live an undisciplined life. A reckless life. A life without cheshbon. And again, what are we telling our children? What are they learning? I was zaycha to learn what I learned from my father, Olav Shalom. I was zeichet to see my parents struggle. I wouldn't trade my upbringing or my rich wind bike for anything in the world. Some of you didn't grow up that way. But you can still learn discipline, fear, and to be ashamed of the right things. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this set of circumstances, these challenges that we have today, and they are great, He also gave us the koyach habechira. Don't let anybody convince you that this situation is hopeless. It's not for anyone. We have bechira. Fiscal responsibility is our responsibility. It starts with the next decision you make. And it's with every decision you make, as Rabbi Gwertzman said. Be disciplined. Have a healthy dose of fear. And be too ashamed to be shamed into doing what you know is wrong for you and your children. Thank you for listening to me.
Before we close out, I want to just invite Mr. Horowitz to Lakewood. There are houses for sale. You may be able to afford them. If we get the mortgage rates down, but talk to him before you have that spreadsheet going. The Ramban says, and our Zayd the Bedichavis says as well, that when someone has an inspiration, and as we said before, tonight's event is a ruchniyistike event, an event of zehirus, an event of cheshbon hanefesh, that you take that and you infuse that right away into something, into a kli. We have here tonight Rabbi Yehuda Kalish from the LSJ, who will address us for a moment, tell you a little bit about what the LSJ is. Right after the event, LRC is here in the back. LSJ is here, very happy to assist you and guide you. Any questions you have, please see them. I want to just end with one thing, and that is Rabbi Gwertzman, I think, and Mr. Horowitz can both tell you, as Rabbanim and Klal people, very often someone will come into the office and tell you, I don't know if you ever heard something like this. We've almost heard it all. I can't say it. We've heard it all before. Take your time, talk to someone, invest the time, the energy, the kaychas, and with siyata d'shmaya, with the proper ishtalas, the Eibishter will bench us all with only bracha and atzlacha. Have a good night. Rabbi Yehuda.
Good evening. Just wanted to explain a little bit what I do. I, Baruch Hashem, have been coaching for close to 9 years now, and as you heard it say, I've seen it all. We're here just to try to give you a little bit of an awareness, a clarity of what's going on in your life. Not here to judge you. Everyone has different things that are important. Everyone is different in their lives. And we've seen people come in literally thinking that everything is lost, And we just try to give them hope, and try to give them clarity, and try to give them a plan that they can try to work their way out. So when you sign up, you'll have someone from LSJ reach out to you, try to find out what type of personality you are. It'll match you up with one of the coaches from Lakewood. And in them together, when I find when someone has someone that's outside, that's not sitting in the same pain as you are, we can try to come up with something together. I just met a family right before I came here. The second time meeting them, and they're still $5,000 in debt a month. But they have the clarity now, and they're trying to come up with a plan of how we can together try to figure this out. It's not, you know, it's not an easy path, but it's definitely the only way we could try to get some clarity so we can figure out what's going on. So please take advantage of it, and Mitchum, we'll all get to a better place.